you for joining me for the latest installment of TV Madness with Makisha Madden-Toby. I'm your host. Our guest today is Jason Hughes. He's the overnight editor for Huffington Post, and he's also, like me, a rabid Walking Dead fan. And I love talking to Jason about Walking Dead because he always gives me like some insight or something that I didn't think about or didn't realize. Or plus, he read the book, so that's really helpful, too. Thanks for doing the show, Jason. Are you there?
I am here.
Great. So, man, I'm going to set this off by saying, first of all, if you're not watching season 3 of Walking Dead, shame on you. And secondly, if you didn't see last night's episode with this huge plot line surrounding Merle, please stop listening right now. With that said.
And second of all, what's the matter with you? That's some good TV right there.
All right? Oh, my God. So what did you think? I'm going to let you talk about it first and ask you, what did you think of it? And I'll chime in.
Well, first of all, I'm going to say I think that was probably the second best episode of the season.
Yeah, with the first being
the return of Lenny James' character, whose name I'm forgetting.
Yeah,
but that was like a one-off episode that was just a great mood-setting episode. This was this is something the show's been needing for a few weeks because I think it's been kind of floundering a little bit.
Yes, like it
feeling
was
feeling like it's filling space, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. But what they did is the Merle Daryl dynamic, and I love these two characters because they're new to the TV series. They didn't exist in the graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
and surprisingly, they're two of the most fleshed out characters on the whole show.
I agree.
And their whole relationship has been fascinating from the beginning. Merle's fascinating because you know he's this dirty redneck backwaters racist piece of crap. But
how do you really feel,
Jason? To him than that.
Well, right. Yeah. And I found myself loving him, and I know in part, I know it's because I've interviewed Michael Rooker and I love Michael Rooker the actor. So that's part of it.
And it's
right?
A testament to Michael Rooker's ability to make that character both disgusting and compelling and kind of lovable.
Kind of lovable. Kind of like Archie Bunker. But in
post-apocalyptic world. You kind of like when you know Michonne's talking to him, and I'm like, you're kind of hoping he'll throw that chip off his shoulder and maybe give it a go, but instead he makes this bizarre decision to because they didn't really explain the decision as to what he was going for.
No,
other than to mess the governor up a little bit, maybe, or possibly take him out. It was really unclear.
That was the fun. That was the part that I was like, what is he gonna do? And I love the whole car and the zombie thing. I thought it was a really well-executed episode. Probably, like you said, one of my favorites from the season. Probably, for me, my third favorite. I love the Lenny James's return, or his character's return. I can't think of his name. His name will occur.
Morgan.
Morgan. Morgan's return, thank you. And finding out about his son was so heartbreaking. And the lines, his exchanges with Rick, was he and Rick's conversation.
That's another actor who elevates the whole show when he's on screen.
Incredible. Incredible material. Incredible lines. But I think still my favorite was, well, not favorite, but I think one of the best episode or the best episode of season 3 was the death of T-Dog and Lori. And not because I wanted to see either of them go, despite like a lot of people who were like, good, Lori's gone. I didn't feel that way. But I just loved the way it was executed.
Yeah, and the aftermath of that episode with Rick wandering the prison, that was handled well, too.
Yeah.
And it seems that those quieter moments when they just take a little bit to breathe on something so bizarre like that, that you almost, you know, as sitting on our couches watching and eating popcorn, we can't comprehend this world. And they paint such a beautiful picture sometimes.
Yeah.
And this episode, that last scene that they painted with Merle and Daryl.
Oh, my God.
Honest to God, I actually, it didn't cross my mind that the governor would not headshot Merle.
That bastard.
Just be that much more of a dick, you know?
Dude, hands down, I think the governor is like the best villain on TV right now. Because that alone,
he's ridiculous.
That is just cold-hearted. Like, and then I'm like, my husband and I are sitting there going, so what do you think? He shot him in the chest? He shot him in the heart? He shot him in the heart. He could have shot him in the head. I mean, like, like dissecting how he probably killed him so that he would come back as a zombie and, like, that scene could happen. And it blew my mind. I can't. That show, it takes you to other places you don't expect a zombie show to take you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The weirdest thing about it is I'm watching the scene with Merle and Daryl. Merle is a zombie. Daryl, you know, pushing him back, not wanting to kill him, and then gruesomely stabbing him in the face. And I'm watching this and going, this is heartbreaking and beautiful, and yet
it's so violent.
Disgusting.
And I know!
It's just crazy that they did that. And then it's over and you're sitting there and it's like, there's only one left, and now my heart is broken because I don't want it to be over.
I know. What are they going to do now? I love it. I never anticipated, I knew I was going to love The Walking Dead. I never thought I would love it this much. I never thought that I could care about a racist character like Merle as much as I did. That scene between him and, like you said, that last scene, oh my God. Could anybody have had a dry eye? I mean, it's just so touching.
Let me tell you, because I know for a fact that the women out there love them some Daryl. and they've got to love him even more after
that. How could
that
you
scene.
Not?
I mean, because the heartache on his face and just the torment. But then doing what he had to do, really gruesomely.
So gruesomely. That, you know what, though? Some of these zombie deaths are out of control.
Yeah.
None of the zombies, but ew. Michonne and the Stump.
I got a question for you, though, about this show. How are you feeling about Andrea this season? She was my favorite character, probably first season, part of the second season. I mean, I don't know what's going on this year.
I know. I don't know, because I don't like her, but I don't hate her. But
she needs some redemption in the finale.
Okay. To be fair, though, Jason, she tried. They tried, and she tried for redemption when
I know. But you know what? She was a badass at one time.
I know. Now she's like this weak little.
Yeah, it's like
boyfriend loving.
Shows up. Yeah.
You know what I mean? She's all like, well, this is my boyfriend. Because here's my thing. Why in the hell did she get back in the truck with the governor after she knew what Maggie had gone through? After, like, her, like Maggie's dad.
Yeah, I don't know.
Herschel's
good
like,
Lord. You know what? He must be great in the sack.
It's been so long.
Girl's got needs.
But I love the scene, and I forget which episode it was, but it's when Andrea comes to the prison. And there's this great exchange between her and Michonne. And Michonne says, you just traded your friend in for a hot bed and a warm meal. Or whatever.
Exactly right.
Or a warm bed and a hot meal or whatever. But I just thought, yeah, horrible friend. You know what I mean? But that happens all the time in real life. If you watch Girls, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But
you know what? I would love sometimes. The characters on Girls make me wish for a Walking Dead Girls crossover almost every week.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Somebody needs to just get their head bit off.
And, I mean, people would say Lena Dunham or Hannah. I would argue that Shoshana. Well, no, I love Shoshana. I don't know. That's tough. I don't want to go there anymore. I changed my mind. I don't want the girls to be zombies. Maybe just one crossover episode and they could go right back to normal, if that. But, yeah, I mean, the thing is with Andrea, there was so much buildup in terms of her and Michonne. And I feel like we didn't really – it's almost like we got cheated out of that. Because when season three started, we just see them after the fact that they've been together, you know, after the fact that they've been close. But it would have been nice to see them be close.
Well, yeah, because then when Andrea made her decision, it would have had more of an impact for the viewers.
Right.
You know, because we saw Michonne devastated and just hurt by Andrea just choosing the governor out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, you know, on screen, they just met. I mean,
for all intents and purposes,
plenty of time. Yeah,
exactly. For them to say, okay, they've been together all winter or whatever, and they've helped each other out. That's fine. Okay, we understand that. But that needed to be. I feel like, and I don't know how they could have done that, because it was like, you know, I wanted to slow down. You wanted to be that slow, and like all of, you know, sort of the investment you'd have to see put into the relationship. But at the same time, like you said, it means more if you see it. You know, instead of them telling us. And that flashback of them sitting around the fire and then her saying,
that didn't
do it either.
No,
so
that wasn't nearly enough.
I'm hoping
to see them like facing near death situations and relying only on each other and, you know, surrounded by zombies and just some crazy stuff. But we didn't get any of that.
Right. And I mean, clearly you see with them individually and with other people that they can clearly handle themselves around zombies. And they're really, you know, resourceful. That we get it, but it would have been nice to see them together a little bit more and to feel that loss a little bit more. And now it just feels like she was just a shitty friend and like she's gone. And you know what I mean, and like that's it.
It's been a huge disservice to Andrea as a character this season.
It has. It really has. And I think, you know, like you said, did she really redeem herself? She runs back. It's like, you know, I love that. The funniest thing I think that came out of that episode with her and the governor, and he's chasing her and all that stuff, is somebody put on Twitter, this is the worst breakup ever. but I mean, I feel like you get more of a relationship. The relationship between the governor and Andrea is established more than the relationship with Michonne and Andrea. And that's too bad. Right. That's too bad.
Yeah. And then, well, we got one episode left. I thought this battle with the governor was going to be all out war for half the season.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's going to bleed into next season or if it's going
to
be one
right?
big
I mean,
explosive confrontation. But
literally, I mean, basically, unless he dies, there has to be always, you know, they always have to be looking over their shoulder or something. You can't just be like, okay, well, we don't know. But
they blew the farm up in one episode, so they may well just end it all quickly.
Well, I mean, if the previews are any indication, and usually they aren't, they just mess with your mind. You know, yeah. They show the governor and his people coming and blowing up the prison, but right. What does that mean? You know, if they're already gone, which, again, the previews imply. So it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a great finale. Unfortunately, of course, it's on the same night as Game of Thrones. Have you gotten a chance to watch any of those episodes for the new season?
Not the new season ones, no.
Are you excited about that coming back, or what are you excited about?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I hate when they overlap like that because Sundays are
well, yeah.
anyway. But, yeah, no, Game of Thrones is fantastic television.
It's going to be interesting to see how fans, because I would argue a lot of the fans who love, a lot of people who love Game of Thrones love Walking Dead and vice versa. So I can't imagine how do you choose which
one. The only thing you can kind of hope is that people that love fantasy and horror a lot of them tend to be a little more tech savvy, a little younger, so they're more likely to have a DVR probably.
Yeah, I just think it's...
And you have to have one in this day and age.
You have to, but it's so unfair to some extent, you know, to have to choose
exactly.
is so unfair.
That's why, you know, those of us who sometimes can get those little screeners, we just rub it in our friends'
face. All the time, every time I get a chance. I don't mean to, but I you'd have that power. When you
They'll
have
like,
that
oh,
power.
I can't wait for Game of Thrones. You're like, oh, it's so good. I saw it last
I know.
Week. And
I've
like,
got
what?
The first four in the mail. Sorry. Yeah, it's great. What are you? What else are you? Are you looking forward to Mad Men at all or anything else coming up, coming down the pike?
Oh, I watch so much TV. It's sad. I like, just tonight, The Voice is back, and I'm going to watch that. Revolution's back. I'm worried about that just because long hiatuses on broadcast television tend to kill genre shows.
Pretty much. Are you a fan of Revolution? First of all, I should ask you that because I'm not, so I want to know if you are.
I will say I loved Revolution's pilot, mm-hmm. And I loved Revolution from about episode 6 on.
Okay.
It really struggled to find itself. I think it's got a lot of potential, but...
So it got better?
It did get a lot better.
Huh.
Yeah, so I'm hopeful for it. Plus, I have this geek on for post-apocalyptic stuff. That's why I love The Walking Dead. If it's the end of the world and we're all going to die, I'm there.
I love that
That's
kind of stuff, too,
the
but the pilot just did not grab me, and I was just like, really? Like, this is so, I mean, and I love post-apocalyptic shows, but it just, to me, there
was
just...
See, what happened was Tracy Spiridaco's deep blue eyes just sucked me in, and I think she has my soul now.
It was too...
And I have to watch it so she'll give it back.
She's the woman that a lot of people hate. That's amazing that you said that.
Well, but she's got crazy blue eyes. Like they can't. That's got
to
be context.
Note to networks: when critics watch shows, put an actress with crazy blue eyes in it, and you
crazy
have
blue eyes.
Crazy blue eyes. No, I mean the pilot just did not get me, and I felt like it was too reminiscent of Lost in that regard. With the whole at the end of the pilot, where she looks at the computer and she woman, you know, she types in something like they almost found the computer, and they're like, what? You know, I'm like, no. That freaked me out. I just was like, I don't want another Lost. I don't want another, like, to be dragged.
Got burned by a flash forward and all those other ones.
Exactly. So I don't know. Maybe I'll give it another shot before it's too late. I do have some screeners, so that helps.
Oh, we'll see. Yeah. No skin off your back.
What about Hannibal? Are you excited about that at all?
I am. My wife's more excited than I am because she actually has a strange, like, romantic crush on Hannibal Lecter, the character.
Ooh.
Which is disturbing.
Not judging her, but ew. Really? Okay.
It's Anthony Hopkins in that role, and there's something about the whole thing. She finds it very sexy, and it's weird. But I did love those movies as they were coming out.
Yeah, the movies.
I watched Bates Motel, and
I
found
that.
Myself liking it a lot better than I thought I would. So it gave me hope that someone can
exactly
delve into that material without being terrible, because so many movie-to-TV adaptations in the past have been terrible. But they're getting better at it, I think.
Right, and I like this prequel angle. sort of how. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun.
I will say I wish Bates Motel was a period piece. It bothers me it's in the present day. I don't like that.
When he pulled out his iPod. And that's how they get you.
Yeah, because...
Right?
Well, the whole first act could have been in the 40s or the 50s.
Could have been any time, right. And then they get you in the second act or whatever that part was, and he pulls out his iPod, and you're like, oh.
It's like they punched me in the face, and I went, what the hell did that do to Norman Bates?
Yeah, that changes a little bit, but I guess the whole Oedipal complex could happen any time. But still, yeah, that was a little what? This is modern.
I don't know. Just to me, it seems like the Norman Bates story works better in an era where we don't have instant communication everywhere.
Right.
But we'll see. I mean, even with that, I kind of liked it. And it's kind of interesting that the motel scenes all seem to be timeless because, for whatever reason, that motel is set in the 50s. And he only brings out his cell phone when he gets in the car with the hot girl. You know, and I guess that pulls him into the modern era because it's like, ooh, hot modern girl.
Hot modern girls, like glass of phones and iPods. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I know. It's just, it's one of those things that maybe they're going to do like Girls, where it seems like only one person on Girls has an iPhone, which is hard to believe with that generation, but okay.
Exactly.
Right, so maybe they'll just play along with it, or you have to play along with it, and they'll just sort of make it work. But yeah, you could argue, I could definitely see where it would have been better off if it were set in the 50s, but it might be kind of cool if they can make the sort of the modern angle work to their advantage.
I think the following has shown that broadcast television is willing to go as dark as you need to go to make something like Hannibal work.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the past they always, you know, sanitize and all the horror type things, and it becomes very sad to watch.
Oh, I know. Remember during the writer's strike when they trotted out Dexter, they tried to like make it TV,
oh, God.
Broadcast TV friendly. Yeah. That was like a root canal.
Like, here's Dexter. It's a half hour.
What are you doing? That was so weird. Yeah, stuff.
Yeah, no, it was awful.
Yeah, no.
But they've, you know, I think American Horror Story, The Walking Dead, even though those were on cable, that kind of pushed the envelope as to what horror needs to do to succeed. And then Fox took a big gamble with The Following by saying, especially with that pilot, we're going to be gory, gross, graphic, and bloody. And then it worked. And hopefully the people looking at Hannibal are, you know, Hannibal doesn't have to be a blood fest, but it can't shy away from the gore.
Do you like The Following, just out of curiosity?
I do.
I keep watching it because there is a part of me that likes it. I like that genre. I like the horror. Like, you know what I mean? But something about it is so... The part of me that doesn't like it is like, it's reminiscent of 24 and that like it gets so close and like... You know what I mean? Like, it just feels like you can get, maybe you're lucky if you can save one life type of...
Oh, yeah, no, it's very dark and miserable.
You know what I mean? And you're just, and after a while, it feels like it's too much to that in that regard, so.
But for me, James Purefoy, Kevin Bacon are just eating up the screen.
They're so good.
On that show. And even if the plot becomes so ridiculous I can't take it anymore, I'll watch for those two. and whoever that lead the girl is, it's got a big crush on Joe Carroll, the little short-haired girl.
Oh, yeah, she's creepy.
She's so twisted and creepy and scary.
She's so wrong. She's perfect, right? Like, that whole love triangle thing was like, ooh, and yet I couldn't stop watching it.
If I see her walking down the street, even though it's an actress, I will probably cross to the other side.
Yeah, but she better not show up at any of the Fox parties during the summer. I think people will be really grossed out if she even lives that long. Because anybody on that show, with the exception of Kevin Bacon and James Purefoy, is pretty much dead or could die. Right.
Oh, yeah. So, and most likely will.
And most likely will. So, yeah. Well, I'm really, really grateful to you for making the time. I know you're a busy, busy man, and you have lots of stuff, and you're a very important person at Huffington Post, and I don't want to. But you are a delight. I love talking to you, so I can't wait to have you on the show again if you have the time.
Oh, anytime.
Okay, and I make sure I plug what is it, antenna-free TV? Yes.
Antenna-free TV. Check us out. That's me and my buddy Joel Keller. He's actually got an article in New York Times about The Neighbors right now. There's another show that people don't watch, but should.
I like that show a lot. It's very fun.
But yeah, we're there every week at antennafree.tv. So definitely, if you enjoyed my brief time here, I talk forever there.
And people can also find you on Huffington Post as well.
On Huffington Post, usually working the overnight hours, TV replay. You click on TV replay at the top, and 90% of that is me.
Oh, awesome. Very cool. Thank you again for talking to us about this.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Can't talk about Walking Dead enough. So we got to thank Jason again. You know, every time we have a great guest like him, is always better. The show is always better. I'm always better for it. I hope you are too. And our sponsor, Record Surplus in Santa Monica, the last record store. Visit recordsurplusla.com. Thanks for listening.